Well, it will not have escaped your attention that, rail fares are set to rise by 2.7% in January. But we need to find out a little bit more about whether it's justified, and indeed, why it is that they're going up by so much. Bruce Williamson is from Rail Future and joins me now. Bruce, very good morning to you.
Good morning, James.
So 2.7%, how does the government work out, or indeed, how does anybody work out that 2.7% is what the fares must rise by?
Using a very archaic formula that no one believes in anymore. They use RPI, the Retail Price Index, which is, widely considered a less accurate measure of inflation than CPI. Of course, CPI is always lower, or almost always. So what that means is that rail fares increase every year in real terms. And, it means that it's a more expensive, it takes a greater chunk out of people's incomes, and it, it runs the risk of deterring people from travelling by rail.
So isn't this somewhat unfair? Because the main difference between RPI and CPI is that it includes housing costs, so it includes council tax, it includes mortgage interest payments, various other things. So it seems to be pretty unfair that there we have something which is supposed to be a measure of how we live our lives, and the price fares rise significantly, but it doesn't necessarily reflect wage rises.
Well, absolutely right, yeah, because, people's incomes aren't going up by RPI, so this is why I say it's, taking a greater chunk out of people's incomes. It is getting more expensive in real terms. But not only that, we have to compare this to the sort of hypocrisy on the part of the government, because they've frozen fuel duty for motorists for several years on the trot now. So they can afford to make, a concession to motorists to sort of keep motoring cheap, but they won't do it for the poor old rail passenger.
Well, with respect, motoring isn't cheap, and they've just secured, if you like, a freeze on the escalator. So it's not as if you've still got nearly 70p in every pound spent on petrol or diesel going in tax.
Yeah, but that's frozen. That's in real terms a shrinking proportion. The same is not true in rail fares. It's going up ahead of inflation. So there's this sort of hypocrisy, a double standard on the part of the politicians that, we're going to treat motorists with kid gloves and give them an easy ride, but not the rail passenger.
But then on the other hand, there's some discussion as to whether the roads are actually having any money spent on them, and the rails are being funded and pumped with cash that it's got to come from somewhere.
Well, it has got to come from somewhere, but it's a very obvious and very clear political decision on the part of the government that they're going to continue to push more and more of the cost of rail travel onto the rail passenger, which seems fair enough on the face of it. Why shouldn't rail passengers pay? But there's all sorts of knock-on benefits of having a rail system that works and getting people to use it, not least of which, of course, is the environmental factor, because rail is a very green, eco-friendly form of transport, and yet the government seems hell-bent on pricing us off the railway and onto our, polluted and congested roads.
Now, let me just ask you about the Labour Party, who have promised to cut rail fares by a third as part of their nationalisation plan.
Yeah.
Is this sustainable? I mean, could it actually be funded? And is it a good idea?
Well, I think it is. Obviously, we don't. There's a huge public perception that rail fares are too high, and when we compare them to our European counterparts, we do have pretty much the most expensive rail fares in Europe, certainly for walk-on fares. So I think they've sort of struck a chord with the public there, and clearly, the fact that rail fares have gone up above inflation means that in the past they were cheaper in real terms, and they could be again if the government had the political will to do it.
But do you think that really what is driving this is that with rail fares, there are currently, according to this article, there are currently 55 million different fares across individual private operators. This is according to the Rail Delivery Group. And the point is that if, for example, I want to use the tube or the bus, I know exactly how much it's going to cost me, whether I'd book in advance and buy some credit, or I just walk on the tube or the bus. And isn't that the point, that what we've got to do is we've got to get to a position where it doesn't really matter when you book or when you get on, you pay the fare?
Well, there's no doubt that our fare structure is incredibly complex, and we need to I think there's a lot of work that needs to be done to ensure that passengers are always getting the best deal. And the train operating companies will argue, with some justification, that the, you know, the off-peak advance fares are very cheap. They're amongst the cheapest in Europe. You know, so there are some bargains to be had there, but most people want to travel, you know, when they want to travel. They don't have to sort of jump through hoops and book weeks in advance. So for many people, these cheap fares are sort of simply not an option.
And in terms of, I don't know, just bringing back the public's trust in this kind of service, presumably whoever gets into power after the next election needs to spend some time working on our public transportation system.
Undoubtedly, yes, you know, because, you know, I mentioned fares, obviously, that's a big issue in the eyes of the public. Congestion is another big issue as well, and there's reliability. Our reliability isn't too bad compared to our you know, other European railways, but I think congestion is a problem, and all of this really is a symptom of very, very long-term lack of investment in the railway. So there is some investment going on, which is very welcome, which is all great, but it needs to be sustained and long-term. We can't go on with this feast and famine on the railways, which doesn't do anyone any favours.
And I suppose one of the other things that one has to think about is, okay, so, you know, we could see these potential cuts and we're going to get these things dangled in front of us. At some point, somebody's got to pay for the rail system. And I suppose that the big discussion is whether should it be central government and it's collected through general taxation, or should it be the people who use it?
Well, yeah, that's the thing I suggested before, you know, that because there are knock-on benefits. It's worth saying, actually, you know, that the... I think if you look at the train operating companies as a whole in this country, they are paying their way. The overall subsidy is effectively zero. Some lines are subsidised, some lines make a profit, but overall it's zero, which is good. And we're in a situation where passenger numbers, despite the best efforts of the government to price them off, keep rising and rising and rising. But yeah, because of the environmental and practical advantages of having a railway, you know, I think it will always be necessary to have a degree of public subsidy, and clearly that's part of the sort of political debate. You pay your money, you vote for the party you prefer, and takes your choice.
Indeed you do. Just finally to you, as we look at, you know, the rail fares and discussions ahead, presumably this is going to be tainted somewhat by the strike action, which is planned ahead. But I suppose, does that make it more of a political football that we're going to see?
Well, yeah, clearly, you know, it reflects badly on the rail network. It's very, very frustrating for, you know, for passengers, for all of us, really, that they can't resolve this issue, which has been resolved on other lines, on other franchises. So a plague on all their houses, really. And yeah, clearly, you know, the public will be fuming. What can I say? Let's hope they resolve it soon.
Right. Okay, so, and just finally to you, just very quickly before I let you go, what about central ticket bookings? Is it about time that we just got rid of all these different ways in which we can book tickets and it just should be one, or is that, I don't know, nationalisation by the front or the back door?
No, it doesn't necessarily, you know, relate to nationalisation, because if you think about it, the technology is there. We can use our... existing bank cards, our contactless cards to pay for rail fares. It just requires a bit of joined up thinking and integrating of some systems. But, you know, imagine the fantasy. You sort of tap on the bus, which takes you to the rail station. You tap onto the train, you automatically get the cheapest fare, and it's calculated based on, you know, how many times a week you use it and so on. And that would be very, very convenient for passengers, and it's totally doable. It's totally doable now if we have the political will and the industry gets its act together.
Certainly sounds like a potentially bright future, but there we go. Bruce, thank you very much indeed for joining us this morning. That's Bruce Williamson from Rail Future, bringing us up to date on not only the potential rail fares in January, but also some of the other changes proposed that you will see by many of the different political parties as they garner for your votes, funny enough.